met with a girl down in Bolsepikas, and Leah's Beth, Rick Setier, and Tavis Fenuick, or if both the bows after a few. Good day to you all.
Good day. Good day.
I intend to tell you something today about our Cornish Gorseth and the many bards who set the Cornish language on its path to being once more a living language. So it's about the Gorseth, and it's about, we've got the your heritage overseas, where the cousin Jacks have gone. They've taken the Cornish heritage and they've kept it alive, and it's great because it's still going today, and the Cornish are celebrated all around the diaspora. Back home, it was a slightly different story because identity was disappearing until suddenly, towards the end of the 19th century, the Cornish back home in Cornwall realised that they were losing their identity, and that's where they're a different path to heritage and culture. Took off based on originally on the language mostly, and then expanding from there. So that's our website logo, and you'll see that Arwen, the three bars, is our logo for the Gorseth, and you'll see that in one or two other slides. It has several meanings. One of it is Celtic inspiration, which it's actually a Welsh word, and it's a Welsh symbol, which is used by all three of the Gorseths. There's a Gorseth in Brittany, Gorseth in Cornwall, and a Gorseth in Wales, which is the mother Gorseth. It can mean love, truth, and justice, or shafts of light. So it has three meanings. It's a very important symbol to the bards. Going back to the revival of interest in the modern era, and what it means to be Cornish, and the Cornish language connected with that. The starting point has to be with Henry Jenner. He was the one who sort of really started it all going. And somebody said of him, "And the Sergians canuic evo taz, Muri Garenza the Gurno I Vlaz, P Fenni, now Vayev I wear his bras." And in translation, to the Cornish revival, he was a father. Great his love for Cornwall, his country. Where would we be, not for him and his help? And this was written by A.S.D. Smith Carrada. Henry Jenner was important and active in many organisations to do with Cornish culture. But his enthusiasm and his important work for the language, which we're looking at principally here, is often quoted for the saying, "Why should Cornishmen learn Cornish?" The question is a fair one. And the answer is simple, because they are Cornish men and women. He was a bit of a, only for the men, you know, and women weren't very important. Although his wife was also a great person in the Cornish revival, Kitty Lee Jenner. But he was in the days of patriarchs, as you will see in a second. That is Henry Jenner. And that is in his costume. He was made a bard of the Breton Gorseth, because the Breton Gorseth was revived before the Cornish one. And he took the name Gwas Michael, which means servant of Michael, and Michael being one of the patron saints. And there you, you can see this spot the Arwen. And he certainly looks like a patriarch, doesn't he? And he became the first grand bard of the Cornish Gorseth, as we shall see in a minute. In 1904, so we're starting at the beginning of the Cornish revival, he published a handbook of the Cornish language, which was the first such work to be aimed at the interested Cornish man and woman, rather than at academics only. Because before this, just the academics had been dipping into the language. In the same year, he gave a speech to the Pan-Celtic Congress at Carnarvon in Wales, in which he proved, through many examples, that Cornwall was a separate land from England. And also that in addition to their Celtic characteristics, the Cornish had preserved a Celtic language. There has never been a time when there was not some Cornishmen, and women, who knew some Cornish. As a result, Cornwall was admitted to the Celtic Congress, a great boost to that resurgent feeling of being proud of being Cornish. Another important step on the way to the Cornish Gorseth being set up was the setting up of the old Cornwall societies. They're like your Cornwall associations and so on, but they're all in Cornwall, and there are 47 of them now. First one was at St. Ives in 1920, and as you can see, what they are, what they're doing. What, this is what says, gather the fragments that are left so that nothing's lost. So what they are doing is, each one in its area, is finding the fragments of Cornish heritage and culture and recording it. So they were set up before the Gorseth, although you can see their leaflet's got a Gorseth picture on it and other things around. This is Angove and Flamanc at St. Kevin, and various antique things, and we'll recognise that. So that was the first step. Their object, as I said, was to record and encourage the aspects of Cornish history and culture still in living knowledge, their motto being gather up fragments and so on. Now, Henry Jenner had met one of the Welsh archduchs in Wales, and they discussed the idea of setting up a Cornish Gorseth as well. And he was to be a driving force, Rhys Davies, and a major link from the Welsh Gorseth to the Cornish Gorseth. But by this time, Henry Jenner was becoming a bit elderly, so it was another Cornish revival enthusiast who picked up the baton, Robert Morton Nance, who was assisted by William Watson, according to the latter's obituary. More, according to the unknown writer of William Watson's obituary, it was him who got things moving, because, and the quote was, Watson did not read rather vague papers to rather sleepy institutions. Instead, he planned a Gorseth, so that the Cornish Gorseth didn't take the 62 years it took taken the Breton Gorseth to get going. This version of events does not appear in other accounts. So that is Morden and Pedrog, and it was Pedrog who came down to Cornwall and started the first Cornish Gorseth in 1928. And that's Morden in his guise as the second Grand Bard of the Cornish Gorseth. Right, so a number of Cornish men and women had already become bards of the Welsh and Breton Gorseddau. Three in Wales, Henry Jenner in Brittany, and two more in Wales in 1904. In accordance with custom, they all obtained bardic names in the Celtic languages, a custom which is still followed in all the Gorseddau. And in 1928, eight men and women, among them Robert Morton Nance and William Watson, of whom we've already heard, were made bards at Driorchy in Wales, in order to form the core of the new Gorseth. Now, it was the Federation of the Old Cornwall Societies who invited Pedrog to come down to Cornwall and inaugurate the first Gorseth. And this was, the site of the most fitting site was at the Scone in West Penwith, which is a prehistoric stone circle with an atmosphere of millennia of history to it. So that was the site of the first Gorseth. A revival, there is a very early record from around the 6th century AD when bards gathered at three places around Britain. And these bards in those days were those who gathered the genealogy of important families. So they played harps, they sang poetry, they gathered the genealogy. And they gathered at three places in Britain. And one of them has been identified as the Scone Muir in Cornwall. So way back in the 6th century AD, there was a Gorseth in Cornwall from the records. I say bards of those days were just professional poets and musicians, whereas our bards today come from all walks of life. The only thing that has to link them is that they've served Cornwall and Cornish culture in some special way. So we have photographers, we have artists, we have poets, we have musicians, we have those who've studied the language and done the four grades and carried on teaching it. Well, so we have people from all walks of life, so it's much broader church now than it used to be. So the first Gorseth for many centuries was held in 1928 at Scone Muir and presided over by Archduke Pedrog, and then they initiated some more bards to make a bigger group there. Gorseth Curnow is the name of the Cornish Gorseth in the Cornish language. So Curnow being Cornwall in the Cornish language. And it has become widely used because the support of the language is one of the objectives which was set out in the original Gorsaf. Support of Cornish culture, heritage, and the use of the language and the support of the language, because it's part of the Cornish identity in Cornwall. Ceremony was conducted in Cornish, Welsh, and English, and finished with the singing of Brogol Thagantazo, which is what we finished with on Thursday, the land of my fathers, only with the Cornish words. And the leaflets were printed in all three languages as well. That's just a picture of William Watson, who actually was a first cousin of my grandfather. So his granddaughter sent me that picture. That was in the St John ambulance in the First World War. And that's one of the early, because the previous one was on Carn Brae, one of the Gorsaf. And here's a gathering at Roach Rock, which is near St Austell. And that's Henry Jenner, you can see there. They all tended to look rather graybeards in those days. We do have some young bards now. It's become a bit more lively.
Were they all men in those days?
No, there were women. But of course you can't tell very easily, can you, when they're all in their blue robes. And it's very difficult to recognise friends. You sort of look around, you see all the sea of blue and these hoods that they have. No, in fact, Kitty Lee Jenner, Henry Jenner's wife, was made one of the very early bards.
Is there a significance to the robing and the
It's like it's a bonding thing, really. Like,
did somebody design it?
It was designed by the Welsh Gorsaf earlier on. It's loosely based on the Romans, but it's a bit of pageant, if you like, a bit of colour. And when we have our Gorsaf, we have the blue bards. We don't have the other. In Wales you have the white archdruids and you have the blue bards and then you have the green ovates. But we stuck to just bards. We're more egalitarian in the Cornish Gorsaf. We just have bards. And we have, with us, we have a bit of extra colour because our harpist wears a red robe. And then we have the little girls who do a flower dance in green. So, members of the Gorsaf continued to work for the language, and this is a card written by William Watson to Morton Natts, who was the second Grand Bard. And what he's basically saying is, it's good that we're using the language, but it's very difficult because we don't have any dictionaries or anything like that. So it's amazing that he could actually write a postcard. If you imagine trying to learn a language without a dictionary? Just having to look through the texts and look through grammar books and the rings and try and find the words you need. And it must have been a lot more difficult to learn now than it is now, where we've got sort of the things that you need. Throughout the 1920s, he was exchanging letters with Morden and learning the language with him. But he was also helping because he discovered that there were a lot of old people on the Lizard, which is sort of down to, you probably all know where that is, West St. Kevin is, and right in West Penwith, who could still use some Cornish. Some of them knew, they could count in Cornish, and we're talking about the 1920s now, whereas people said the Cornish language had more or less died out, but there were still old people using it. They were still saying the Lord's Prayer in Cornish, they were still counting. So William Watson was collecting all this and passing it to Morton Natts, and this is what the language was actually sort of built on. They were also linking with Brittany, and that's a ceremony in Brittany at the Gorsaf there. And they have this ceremony of the two halves of the sword, where they put them together in symbol of friendship between the two languages. To the two countries. And we're just going to introduce that in the Cornish Gorsaf now. We have slight problems because if you look at those swords, somebody's got to get that through customs. And the Bretons say, oh, we'll bring them over with us. and I just we're just waiting to see. We think we'd better have a sort of hasty sort of one of our own, you know, it's not particularly special, but in case we have to produce it, because they are going to bring those over from Brittany through customs. And then you put them together, and then that's the symbol of the friendship between the two countries. And the Bretons do have the three tiers as well. They have the arch. It's an unfortunate that they use the word archdruid, because even with bards, I have a lot of people saying, oh, do sacrifices, and are you to do with the druids, and all this thing. And it's nothing to do with religion. It's purely cultural. And to use the word druid was unfortunate, I think, because people tend to think it's a religious pagan setup, and you know, birds sacrifices and mistletoe and things like that, whereas it isn't at all, it's purely cultural. Okay, so in 1929, Morden published a book called Cornish for All, which was again offering the opportunity to any person who wished to learn a bit of Cornish to learn it without going to the sort of heavy, stodgy grammar books. It was a much easier to follow light book. And William,
who was the author of that book?
Robert Morton Nance. I may have said Morden. Morden was his bardic name, and it means a sea wave. We all choose a Celtic name when we're made bards, and that's just really a little book of phrases in Cornish. And his bardic name here is Deobab, which means son of the soil, because he was a gardener.
What is the word for son?
Mab. M-A-B. It's been mutated there, but it's M-A-B. And it, with the Cornish, one of the things difficulty for people learning Cornish initially is that it does these mutations. So when you've got tier, which is land or sand or whatever, and you have it together, you mutate an M to a V. So tier map. Once you get the hang of it, it's okay. Welsh does the same. And the Bretons do the same. All the languages do that. Okay, so as you can see, it's issued by, so we still have the strong link between the old Cornwall societies, the Federation of Old Cornwall Societies, and the Gorseth. And that still applies today. If you ever get to a Gorseth ceremony in Cornwall, we have the big circle. We have usually about 150 bards in a big blue circle, and then we have the harpists. We have two harpists now in the middle. And the dais on which stand the big chiefs, myself and the others on this dais. And then round the outside we have the old Cornwall societies with all their colourful banners, like you have for your heritage and association, you have your banners. And they stand there with all these colourful banners round the outside for each of the groups that they have their federation for. So this is really just a little book that so that people could meet and greet in Cornish. It says, you know, hello, how are you, the weather's fine today, and things like that. So not sort of going through the grammar or anything like that.
Can you translate what the scroll says across the
Yes, it says, Nins you marrow, mitten Arthur. King Arthur is not dead. So it's done in rather old-fashioned, and there you are, good old Cornish chuff.
Yeah.
Ninzu Marrow. Sorry?
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah, hi.
You're the first person I've ever heard speak it as if it's your language. Are there many of you?
There are quite a lot of
people
now, yes. It's growing fast because it's now been recognized officially by the European Union and the government of Britain. And it's amazing how many children are keen on learning it because they feel it's their heritage. And even if you just learn enough to greet, meet and greet, and you can understand the place names and all that sort of thing, it's such a poetic language. You know, it really is. So yes, it is growing. It is growing. And we meet in pubs and have a sort of chat.
That'll help.
Nothing like a few bevvies and you all get going and chatting away.
Loosen your tongue.
Languages, you're always much better off with languages when you've had a glass of wine or something. You don't feel so shy about trying and making mistakes. Okay, so.
Morden.
Are these publications still available?
That one isn't, I'm afraid. But there are plenty of publications about the language, and there are plenty of sort of ones that just give you the phrase. Okay, so by this time, a dictionary was published. So finally, people had got something they could look up words in, and they could start writing their own themes and stuff. And there was also another bard, the one who wrote the original thing about Henry Jenner, who published lessons in spoken Cornish, because you don't really want a language that you just read and write. The big thing is to get people talking it, and he wrote lessons. And he also wrote a book called Cornish Simplified, and a lot of people call it Cornish Complicated because it is quite difficult to follow, but it's useful as a dippy book if you want to just look at it. So it was based on Welsh Simplified. I've been mentioning Robert Morton Nance or Morden, which was his body name. And the Gorseth has actually published a book about him, setting Cornwall on its feet, because Henry Jenner had started it off, but it was Morden, Robert Morton Nance, who sort of got things really going in the sort of resurgence of being proud to be Cornish, and being proud. And it's great now that we've got Cornwall and lots of people there who are proud to be Cornish, and then we've got this great link up around the diaspora. We've got all you cousin Jacks and Jennies, and it really is great now because the Cornish have got this sort of round the world link, and the heritage and the culture is really being very strongly kept alive and being recognised. That's again Morden in his oak leaf headdress, which you may have seen on Thursday if you were there. We now have a crown instead, but it's still got the oak leaves around it, as a sort of, because the oak leaves were very much associated with the Celts. The oak tree was something very important. Morden was actually quite an amazing man in many ways, because he painted, he wrote plays, he wrote poetry, he did the language, and he was the first grand bard, a second grand bard, and so he was a man of sort of many parts, really. In the early days, there seemed to be a problem of a sort of gap, a schism between the bards who'd become bards through the language and the sort of wider Cornish community, as I say. It became a bit inward-looking. So in the 30s, they started making bards for other things. And that's when we started getting bards from all things that might be useful. Right, this is at the start of one of our ceremonies, and that's our banner that goes before us. We have a piper playing the Cornish bagpipes, and then we have this banner. My sister made that banner for us. Keep it in the family. And there you see the Arwen again, and the Cornish pheasants around the outside. The gold pheasants. The gold. Theory, they were used as to pay off the ransom of one of the princes, Duke of Cornwall, when he got taken with him for a hostage. So they appear on the coat of arms. That's at Penzance, not last year, but the year before. You can see all the bards gathering up the top there to take part in the procession. We processed through the town to a park and then had our
What was the symbol called again?
The Arwen. A-W-E-N. Love, truth, and justice, or inspiration, or shaft. Anyway, today, as I said, there are lots of bards who don't no Cornish as such. We have our ceremony in Cornish, and they can, most of them say, good morning, or, well, a lot of them can say good morning or whatever, but they don't actually know Cornish, so
But in theory, they should subscribe to the fact that we must support the Cornish language. We must try and keep it as part of our identity and part of our culture. I'm trying to think where that was, but there's the banner again.
That was new.
Oh, that's new last year, yes. You can see how windy it was. Yes. That's just to give you an idea. There's the piper. And this lady is going to be the next Deputy Grand Bard. She's just been elected. And the marshals. And then that's the beginning of the procession. And I think there were at least about 160 or 170 there last year. And it was a lovely sight overlooking the coast. But it was windy and we had a lot of rain. The ones who are carrying their hats are the initiates. And they carry them until they're welcomed into the Gorseth, and then they put the boss. Yeah, so those are all the new bars. And you may even spot Tim Hoskins up there. It's a bit difficult with
Is the course like, is that the group? Is that what the group is called?
The Gorseth. Gorseth means a sort of gathering or a seat.
Oh, okay.
Yes. It's a Welsh word. But we spell it with a TH, well, now with the standard written form, we'll have to spell it with a DH, but in Cornish.
Oh. Yeah.
Right, a number of plays and poetry and everything all being written as that. You may or may not know, but the Cornish language, when they were sort of getting together their dictionaries and grammar books and everything like that, they based it on old plays, which we fortunately still have, written in the 14th, 15th, 16th centuries. So it wasn't just, people say, oh, it's a made-up language. It wasn't. It was based on written literature and on the place names and so on. And so the place names gave a hint as to pronunciation and the rhyming of poetry and things like that. And then ever since the revival in the beginning of the 20th century, we've got lots and lots more plays and poetry and novels written in Cornish, and so it's really expanding now. And one of the things which finally the powers that be have woken up to is that it's something for tourism, because the Welsh have made a great thing of the Cornish language, of the Welsh language and tourism, and people on holiday think, oh, I'm in somewhere different, when they see things in another language. And so finally now signs are gradually, as they're being replaced, having English and Cornish. And this is the bridge into Cornwall from Plymouth. And finally, last year, we got them to put that sign up. They had a little ceremony on the bridge, and it means the same thing. Curno being the word for Cornwall, and then you welcomes. So Cornwall welcomes. And a lot of you helped with our campaign to keep our coat of arms. Because they were going to have this silly little logo. Which looked like, well, it looked like St. Prunus' flag being burnt on a pyre or something like that. Or somebody's hair standing up.
Here in the States, it was in Cornish World.
Yes.
So we brought it to our society.
I think they were quite astonished, actually, at how many emails and letters they had from the States, they had from Australia, New Zealand, and all around. And they were quite taken aback, I think, because they didn't realize the strength of feeling.
It was ugly.
Yeah. And as many people said, you see that, and you, all the Cornish cousin Jacks and Jennies say, ah, oh, that's Cornwall, that's our. And there you've got the Bessies again. So finally they realised, and thank you very much all of those who helped us to keep it. Okay, so by the 1960s the language had got enough momentum for them to set up a language board, to set up exams in Cornish, and this language board, when it has its meetings, they're entirely in Cornish, no English allowed. So I have 2 hours of solid Cornish, discussing business, examinations, all sorts of things. And having set up the examinations is how you get now, in the old days, to be a language bard, you had to write a dissertation and read it or something like that. But now you have to pass these four grades of quite exacting exams, including 50% of it being oral. So you have to be able to speak and understand them. And now, when you've done that, you still have to prove that you're doing something for either for Cornwall or the language, like teaching or writing or whatever like that, and then you're made a bard, a language bard that way. I haven't mentioned another organisation which is connected with the Gorseth. That's in Penzance again, and you'll see you've got some. At each of our ceremonies, we have representatives from Wales and Brittany, and there you can see the white ones there are the Bretons in our procession, and then we had some Welsh representatives as well. And then these guys are the ex-grandbards. You get to have a gold instead, and you've got your arm in there. And this is Barbara Shaw, who any of you have ever written to the Gorseth. She's retired now, but she was the secretary. And then Seth Foscurno is, like the Welsh Eisteddfod, it was a linked organisation for cultural events, which they used to hold every 3 years, and now they try and have a few, every time there's a Gorseth, linked to the Gorseth. So there'll be lectures, concerts, poetry readings, things like that. And that's the Eisteddfod banner. I've included that because I think it's a lovely banner. Eisteddfod being a sort of equivalent of Eisteddfod. Oak leaves, I think.
Oak leaves.
And that's Welsh. Eisteddfod is the Cornish version of Eisteddfod, which the Welsh have these music and poetry events, which they call an Eisteddfod. That's the Cornish version of it. As Eisteddfod mentioned there, by this time, bards were writing and getting together and speaking and so on. And bards have also written modern courses for those who want to learn Cornish. And somebody mentioned this morning KDL, which is Cornuic Dreilitha, which you can learn distance learning Cornish, or all throughout Cornwall. Now we have classes, evening classes. So, you know, so there are plenty of opportunities. But then, being Celts, the fighting breaks out. In 1985, somebody devised a new form of calligraphy. Morden had got all the old texts and things like that, and he'd written what he called unified Cornish, a unified system of spelling and grammar, and he'd published everything was published in that, until the 1980s, when Dr. Ken George fed all these documents into a computer and came up with a phonemic spelling called Cornuic Kemin, Common Cornish, which doesn't use C's or a QU, it only uses K's and KWs and things like that. But it didn't carry everybody with it. If it had, no problem. But it didn't. So you've got the band that carried on using Unified, you had the band that went over to Cornuic Kemin, and then somebody else decided there was another form that should be used, modern Cornish, which was based on Cornish in the 16th and 17th centuries before it died out, which was, he said that's the one we should use because we should just pick that up and run with it again. So you've got these three groups all at each other's throats and blood on the floor and everything for 20 years, basically. The Gorseth stuck to unified Cornish because they decided at an AGM that that's the best way of keeping above the fighting. Just carry on with what we are using, which was unified, until such time as something is sorted out. Well, finally, when it was recognised by the government, the government said, we can't have this, you can't have you all fighting. Cornish will never survive if you're all fighting about it, which happens, I gather, in Ireland and all sorts of places, well, Brittany, and so it's very Celtic, I think, to scrap among yourselves. So they set up a partnership which Cornish Gorseth is very much involved in, to more or less shut them in a room and say, you're not coming out till you've agreed. And so they did this. And finally, last year, we have, ta-da, the standard written form, right? Which is not perfect. Nobody likes it. That's probably why it's good, because it's based on bits of all. It's Canuit Kemin light, because most of it's Canuit Kemin. It uses the Ks and the Kws and so on. But it's also got feed-in from the other forms of Cornish. And at the AGM in June, the Gorseth agreed that the best thing for us to do to make sure this standard written form survived was to support it. So we are gradually changing. So it will no longer be G-O-R-S-E-T-H. It will be G-O-R-S-E-P-H, which will be the standard written form.
Should I change that now?
Well, you can change it now if you like, because that's how it will. But obviously, it's going to be a gradual. Okay. But our ceremony in September is going to be in the standard written form. And it was very much the government and the county and the council of Cornwall said, if you don't agree and we don't get a standard written form, no money, no support. And that would mean the children, no chance to learn Cornish. So it's so important that we got this. And now, because it's agreed, hopefully the money will carry on. And it's not going to be compulsory or anything like that, but there are going to be clubs put into the schools where the children can learn. And I went into my local school recently to give a talk on the Gorseth, and one little boy said, can I bring my mummy and daddy? And so we're going to have some clubs where it's mum and dad and the children, and they will learn Cornish together. And as I say, even if you've just learned enough to sort of pass the time, that's just a picture at the end of the ceremony. There you've got the ex-grandfathers again. That's the deputy grandpa, that's Mick Pater. And then Rod Lann, who was grandpa before me, and Brian Coombs, who was grandpa twice before him, and Jory Ansell, who was before him. He hasn't got Anne Jenkins, but Anne Jenkins has been over here a lot, hasn't she? And she was the first woman grandma. And
I don't mean to. Who designs these, and how do they come about? I see they're all different.
This one is because Brian is the Gorseth chaplain.
Okay.
Although we're not affiliated to religion, we do have a chaplain because we do have Cornish language services, but they're not of any denomination or anything like that. And our Gorseth prayer apparently would apply equally to a Hindu. It's just a prayer to God. Okay. And then these ones, they've all got the Awe. This one was designed by Francis Cargig. Now, he was a coppersmith in Cornwall in the 50s and 60s. And all our regalia was made by him, of the Grand Bath. I didn't bring it, I'm afraid, because I was so frightened I would lose it on the way. So I just had the old plastron when I walked over. But they are beautiful copper, Cornish copper work. And of course, it's very important we have copper in Cornwall because all of us are all our heritage is copper, copper and tin and so on. So they are designed sort of by local copper specialists, really. So it's not anything particular, but it's the RON. So they have the gold one, the expert class. Right, so Gorseth Curnow was very much involved in the getting the standard written form, because this is part of our remit, is to make sure that the Cornish language survives and is able to go forward. But it also mustn't get the impression that the language is just what we do. We support anybody in the Cornish diaspora or in Cornwall who's doing something for Cornwall in whatever way, family history, music, poetry, any support, whatever, for our heritage. So it's sort of thank you to you all, because you're all working in some way or another to make sure.
Is that kind of the manifesto or like the...
We have a constitution, yes, and I'm trying to think exactly what it says, but it basically says the Cornish Gorseth exists to support the Cornish Celtic heritage particularly, but the Cornish heritage in all forms of its music or language or whatever, but to support people using these things and doing research and also carrying them forward. Yes. I haven't got the exact wording here, but we do have a constitution that actually states that. It's great that, in fact, you know, we hear that there are Cornish Christmas songs sung here in Grass Valley, taken out by the Cornish miners who went home to you. And in Australia and New Zealand, they're often more Cornish than we are back home, because when I went to Australia a couple of years ago, the great big Kanuik Luenda, which Ross Patterson was talking about, all the Cornish flags and the pasties and Cornish singing and everything like that. So it's great, I know, it warms the heart to think that.
We do in our church do the Cornish carols at Christmas.
That's great, yes. Yeah.
Starts with a name.
Marriott.
Yes.
Marriott,
yeah.
Sorry.
We have a lot of them. And original music.
Yeah. That's what it's all about, keeping it going. Mm-hmm. And it's a sense of identity, isn't it? It's amazing because all of you who've got some Cornish blood, you probably find that's a very strong side of you. If you've got other blood, it doesn't seem to be quite so strong as your Cornish blood. I know, I'm only half Cornish, it's only on my father's side, but that somehow seems to take over and be the strong. Another thing that the Gorseth does is to try and encourage publishing in Cornwall. And we have this annual event where this year we had 92 books, and now publishing is suffering because of the internet and the fact that people can download and everything. And so it's amazing, in fact, that Cornish publishing is on the up. The standards are going up, the numbers are going up, and they enter these books into the Polyr Angove, which means the follower of the Smith. Angove was the one who rebelled against the taxes in 1497. And so the publisher, Len Truren, took his name as his barley name. So we have the follower of the Smith trophy, because he was a publisher, it was set up in memory of him when he died. Right, so they enter their books for this award, and they have a judging panel, and then we have a ceremony in a big bookshop in Truro, and they get their awards and so on, and they get some money which they put towards the charity of their choice. It's not a monetary thing as such, but they have money which they put towards the charity. And as I say, this is all organised by Anne Trevenan-Jenkin, and it has done a great thing for Cornish publishing. The books, more and more books are being published, and their standard has gone up tremendously. And there again, you've got your Arwen. And there it's got, and we're Irvin and Bees, which is the Cornish, the Gorseth motto, which means the truth against the world.
Was she the bard that wasn't present in that last book?
Yes, right, yes. Yes, she was the first lady Cornwall. And in that, Cornwall is another first in that, because neither the Breton nor the Welsh Gorseth have ever had a woman leader. Whereas Cornwall's we're on the second, and we might even have a third before too long. So we're a world leader on that day.
Yeah, the people that speak the other Celtic languages, can they read Cornish?
Not all of it, no. If they're very fluent, they probably can, because they can guess the bits that aren't the same. But they got divided in about 590 or something like that, when the Saxons pushed across. So they were all one language then. I'm just talking about Welsh, Breton and Cornish. Because the others were another branch. But they were all one language till they were split up in about 565, 70. So then they started developing separately. The two closest are Cornish and Breton, because just being across the channel, there was a lot of toing and froing, and a lot of Breton fishermen coming to Cornwall and vice versa. But there are a lot of words that are the same. The word for a mountain, Meneth, is the same in all three. Dew means black, D-E-W, dew means God, and there are just so many words which are the same. So you can make a pretty good guess when you look at the others, but you need to be very fluent to sort of fill in the gaps.
How much has Devon and these other areas that were taken over retained their Celtic heritage?
Devon has to a certain extent, but not very much. If you go up on Dartmoor, there are still some places which have got the Cornish language name. Like I found a place called Tolman, which was means a stone with a hole, basically, up on Dartmoor. Because it was not until the 900s that the Cornish were pushed out of Devon. So it was later there. But Devon is an English county, basically. It's across the Tamar. So when you go across the bridge, you always think, I'm going into Cornwall. And as you saw the sign, Colonel.
We went with Howard Colonel. He made us get out and walk across. Took pictures and yep, that's Howard.
Yes.
This may be a side, but where Prince Charles is the Duke of Cornwall and his new wife is the Duchess of Cornwall, do they ever come down and participate, or have they made any effort to learn the way he learned the Welsh language to learn the Cornish?
No. He comes down occasionally, but usually just to open something or whatever. He isn't very involved in Cornish affairs at all. No. Just takes all the money out from his estate in Cornwall. And on the Isles of Scilly more so. He's not very popular over there because all the rents are set by the duchy.
Oh, I see.
And they've been going up and up and up. Okay, so there'll be plenty of time if you have any questions. But just to finish, I'll go back to the words of William Watson on one of his poems. Gru cara tavas an ola agastithio, an wethan ganuit gra leitha hidelio. Love your language for all of your days, and the Cornish language tree will spread her leaves. Okay, so if there are any other questions, I know there have been some questions we've gone on.
What language family, I guess, or what other languages in the world are most similar in structure and vocabulary?
Well, it's only those three, really, because, well, the Celtic languages split very early on into two, and you've got the Goidelic or the Cume Celtic languages, which is Scottish, Gaelic, Irish, and Manx, the Isle of Man language. Those are the Cume Celtic languages, and then you've got the P Celtic languages, which is the Welsh, Breton, and Cornish. So it's just those three that are similar to each other. And based on the same, the grammar has this mutation I was talking about, and a lot of the words are the same, and the way the structure goes is the same for those three. But not any others, really.
But way back, they're all Indo-European languages.
Yes, yeah. And you thought there seemed to have been a sort of hole in the Caucasus where all these people were coming out and moving west. Because you get these languages, Indo-European languages, moving west.
Is Arwen, the three chefs of light, I'm probably saying it wrong.
No,
is that a Welsh word?
Yes, it is.
Do you know what it means?
It means inspiration.
Inspiration.
But and so the actual symbol has those other two interpretations as well. It's the Celtic inspiration, so that's why it's suitable for poets and musicians and so on like that. Any other?
Do you get many entries into the Gorseth contests from overseas?
We do get some, but not a huge number, but we used to get because in Australia there are quite a number of bards now who are language bards, and we used to get Leslie. She used to enter the Cornish language competition, and we could get some of the poetry and some of the other writing from overseas, but not a lot.
Is the information about them on the website?
Yes, it is. Yes, and there'll be just a new one starting any day now because we've got all the results from the last one.
Right. Is there much literature that survives from ancient times that was originally written?
Well, I think the earliest is the Bodmin Manumissions, which was Cornish slaves being set free by the Saxons, and that is written Cornish. Some of it's Cornish and some of it's Latin.
Are there books and books and books?
No, but there's quite a lot of literature from the 14th, 15th, 16th centuries, AD. So that's as ancient as we get, but there's quite a lot of it now, and not just, most of it's religious, mostly because people couldn't read and write. They used to tell the Bible stories in poetry and drama and so on like that. So most of it's religious, but there is some secular as well. And that's website, www.gorsethkernow.
Which spelling?
G-O, there's still the T-H, G-O-R. S-E-T-H, straight into, no gap, K-E-R-N-O-W, .org.uk.
Does the Grand Bard have like political representation, or is it strictly just...
It's non-political. The nearest thing I do is the Lord Lieutenant of Cornwall asks me to sit on a sort of community board, so I do that. And quite a few community things, but nothing political. But it is ever so difficult. We've got to do this tightrope because to protect and fight off the threats to Cornwall, you do need to be a bit political.
Yeah.
And so, like the logo that we had to buy, yeah, how political can you get without being too political? So it's a bit of a tightrope, but officially we are not political. Yes.
I have a few quick questions. The first is, are the Cornish bards named with Cornish contact names?
You said yes, it's in the Cornish language, yes.
Okay, and the other is Carn Bray, I'm probably saying it wrong.
Carn Bray, that's fine.
Why was that site selected?
Well, it's you've got Redruth Pool and Camborne around the bottom of it, and it's a great big rocky outcrop with a monument on the top. So it was the sort of, it is, and it's got an ancient Neolithic and then Iron Age camp on the top. So it's a sort of a good symbol of Cornwall.
And the last question I have, thank you, is that I've noticed that on the city crest of Redruth, it looks like a Druidic type of figure. Is that because Morton Nance? Is that from
No, he didn't have anything to do with Red. I'm trying to think. I can't picture
Red Ruth is the lamb.
Yeah, I thought it was the lamb and flag. Lamb and flag.
Yeah,
lamb and flag is Red Ruth.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I got a. It might be a more modern one. But
it may be somebody else's.
It's like a Spode or the Marsh. Used it as the city crest.
Definitely their banner is a lamb with a flag.
Is the word eglos...
It means a church.
But is that a Cornish word?
Well, it's Latin, actually. It was borrowed from Latin.
Okay, I was...
Like all other languages, again, people accuse Cornish of being synthetic, but what language doesn't borrow from others?
Eglise in French.
Yeah, eglos is borrowed from Latin. And because
or close in the English.
Latin was the language that was sort of across Europe at that time, so they borrowed fenesta for a window, because presumably their houses were these round houses without windows. So we had a word for door, daras, but not a word for window.
I work with a lot of people that speak other languages and they speak their own language, and if they're on the phone, they all speak their own language, and at the end they go, okay, bye-bye.
Yes. Go going back to the Celtic names, my Bardic name is Gwenenen, G-W-E-N-E-N-E-N, which means a bee.
Oh, that's a bee.
So,
a bee.
A bee.
It means what? Oh, a bee.
Are you? Because my name is Bee Man.
Okay.
But other people will have things like Mac Langerstenton, son of Langerstenton, or Guas Michael, which was Jenna's name, servant of Michael, or whatever. So you can choose anything within reason.
When we were over there, I just couldn't get over the cottages, and usually they had a name. So we've been trying to research because I want to have a sign in front of our house. So my girlfriend, my husband's Willie, so she said we should have Tree Willie.
Yeah, well, why not?
Yeah, why not? But, you know, that
it's... Tree Willie, yeah.
Any other? We're a bit early, but it doesn't matter to say.
Does anyone translate any portion of the Bible?
Yes, the New Testament is all in Cornish.
Really?
And that's one of the reasons why Cornish died in the first place, declined in the first place, because when the Latin prayer book was translated into English in the 1500s, it was translated into Welsh, but it wasn't translated into Cornish. But finally, we have now had a prayer book for a long time, but we now have the whole New Testament in Cornish.
Are those available?
Yes.
Uncle and him, so.
Probably,
yeah. Again, through the internet, you could probably. They're published by the Kesver and Tavis Cynuric, which is the Cornish Language Board. But the Gorseth is well behind it, too. Most of the translators were bards.
For this ceremony that you'll be having in September, does it pull a lot of the general population?
We do usually get quite a big audience, yes. Yeah. And of course, what does spread out? Somebody asked a question about entries. We also have competitions which are open to the public, particularly we have children and adults. And of course, when little Johnny's coming for his cup, mum and dad and granny and granddad, and they all come as well. So we have those, and then we just have tourists and a lot of the people from the local town that come out of curiosity. And this is strictly between these four walls. The first time I went to a ceremony, I went to think, I'm going to put a little laugh at this, you know, it's going to be a bit strange, a bit funny. But it's actually very moving and quite sort of interesting. And when you actually go there.
So the general population of Cornwall, like the modern population, are kind of there.
There are an awful lot of people who aren't aware, but we do have quite a high profile now in the sense that we do a lot of community things as well. We're not too inward looking now. We are looking out into the community and trying to make people aware of their Cornish heritage and culture.
How many members are there in the?
The Gorseth, 500.
500.
And I think about 70. Are overseas bards.
That includes 70 overseas.
About 70 are overseas, yes. And we usually get about 250 at the ceremony. Sometimes it's 150 to 250.
Can you tell me, in the case of the death of a bard, would you have a special funeral?
Mm. One of us tries to go to the funeral. To just represent the Gorseth. We don't have a special funeral, it's just whatever they were, Methodist or Catholic or whatever. Mm-hmm. But we try and get to the funeral to represent the Gorseth, and we mention their name at the next ceremony. We have a bardic roll. But we read it out and say, you know, so and so, we remember them and they passed over.
Thank you.
Like Miss America. Do you do any ceremonial things during the year?
We have a proclamation where we go to the town where we're going to be holding it and have a sort of short, rather like the service, the ceremony we had on Thursday, we have a short version just to say we're coming.
But you don't appear at any other kinds of events?
Not in full dress, no.
Okay.
I just have the little copper plastron with the Arwen on when I go to represent officially somewhere.
It's called a plastron?
Plastron. P-L-S. E-R-O-N. Just me. I have not sure the exact meaning of that, but it's a sort of neck.
Breast Lake, yes. I was in Breslau. Where do you live now? In Cornwall. In Cornwall. Yeah, I've been there since 1985. Well, did you mention that there's a correspondence that we could take a correspondence course of some sort if we wanted to? Yes, there's KDL. KDL? Do we know the address? No, but you can search on KDL.
Yeah, if you put it in Google.
Just Google KDL. Yes. Yeah. Okay, and look for the language course. Or even just put Cornish language courses or something like that. You said now that the language has been standardized.
And so if I went on the web, is there for Cornish dictionaries, or is there just one, or are there still three or four?
It's still in the process, but if you want to learn a bit more, there's also a website called MAGA, M-A-G-A. I don't know the exact address, but they are the ones who are promoting the standard written form.
Okay.
I mean, that means nurturing MAGA.
Different than Spanish.
Where it means, you know, fighting or something. It probably does. But most
of the majority of the dictionaries and the book are all in common right now. But that's just as good because it's a flowing language, which is why there's mutations, so it comes flow. So if you can read it and pronounce it, then it doesn't make any difference how the other person sees it written, because it's the same flowing language.
All the different versions that, certainly Canuit Kemen and Canuit Yunis, the unified, if we get together to have a chat, we can understand each other. It's just when you get to the printed word.
When you take it by email, how do you hear it? Do they send you
audio? Each lesson has audio there.
Can you become a grand bard once you've already been?
No. Oh, well, you have to have a gap anyway, but I think 3 years is probably, it's quite hard work.
Because now
we do so much more. In the days when you just sort of had to go to ceremonies and things, it wasn't hard, but now when we're trying to do more in the community, it's...
I have, look on the Cousin Jack site, you know, do you look there, because I keep it updated every month. I have all the links. Okay. There's a link to KDL. There's a link to the little TV YouTube programs in Cornish, and there's also a link to the radio program.
Yes, Daniel Egba, which is, somebody's doing a monthly radio program in Cornish.
There's
Ted, who does our website, is doing these little videos in Cornish.
Okay.
There's quite a lot out there now.
Great.
So I should look at Cousin Jack every month, because I try and keep it up to date for the latest news and all that. And the links, I make sure the links are worth it. So.
Anybody else?